So I want to move on and talk about another case, and then we're going to move on to the use of checkpoint inhibitors in gynecologic cancers. But just a couple other quick points I want to make from questions that we asked. So we asked, which of the following has demonstrated benefit combined with chemotherapy? And there's only one that's been looked at. That's veliparib. We showed you that before. And again, it looked like similar benefits. We're trying to point out for you areas where people agree. And there's lots of areas where people are arguing right now. So this is one of them. So we're trying to kind of separate out the stuff that everybody agrees to and everybody's arguing about. Just one other issue that I think we mentioned already, the fact that the duration of treatment, at least in the trials, was different and what the implication that may be moving forward. But let's again get back to real life. And Paula, I'm sure we could talk for 25, 30 minutes about this lady. She's so interesting. But maybe you can just kind of focus a little bit on what happened to her when she started the maintenance of olaparib. She's a 63-year-old woman, and it looks like she presented initially in April 2018 and ended up getting olaparib. Can you talk a little bit about what happened to her when she got the treatment, Paula, and a little bit about her as a person?
Yes, and it's interesting. I only put the dates in there specifically because before December 2018, we didn't have a maintenance right after chemotherapy. So this was, like she said, the gods were looking out for her. Whereas before it was patients had to have prior therapies or first relapse. But anyway, and we did the foundation one, not endorsing one company over the other, but for the same reason, she had the loss of heterogeneity, so HRD positive. So we were able to get that approved.
Looking down there to the bottom then, she didn't have a germline mutation, but she had a mutation in the tissue itself.
Exactly.
And so that got her on the olaparib. What happened at that point?
She's a violinist and very active, and she's also conducting. And so initially when she was diagnosed, the biggest thing was, am I going to have peripheral neuropathy due to the carboplatin and the Taxol? So we monitored that very closely, and she did very well in the sense that she only had grade one. And then we did education with her for the olaparib. And it's interesting because Jennifer will practice differently than I, not right or wrong, just different styles. And the package insert says for olaparib, you want to do a baseline and then check the CBC monthly. Whereas niraparib, because there is a higher incidence of thrombocytopenia, you want to do it weekly for the first month. Because we've used so many PARP inhibitors in clinical trials, I have always treated every patient as if they were on a clinical trial, even though they're not. And I'm so used to treating patients that have been heavily pretreated, so I'm still treating them very conservatively, even though going forward, these patients receiving it in the maintenance setting are going to do much better than all of us who have had this past history of hematological toxicities. But we monitored her CBC weekly for the first month. And then after that, we go to monthly.
I just recommend that you watch Paula's presentation where she goes through every single one of these points. It's a fantastic presentation. But Paula, maybe just to pick one out as a little bit of a teaser, you put in there the issue of fatigue and deconditioning. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, so it is interesting. So when we talk about a class effect, so we have nausea and fatigue. And again, is the fatigue due to anemia, thyroid condition, the fact that she had chemotherapy, other comorbidities, that sort of thing. But also many patients are not as active, meaning physically. So they're deconditioned. They haven't been exercising as much as they should, even though we promote that and remind them to do that. So checking the hemoglobin is very important. And also, what's her lifestyle like? So I think that's really important in reminding patients that that fatigue usually is very common initially, but it does lift and plateau. And for patients that we've had to either hold the drug or dose reduce, they notice the difference. It's like, oh yeah, I noticed that my fatigue improved after I held or was dose reduced. So far, she's been on this over a year and we have not had to dose reduce. She is still playing her violin. She's conducting. But again, for those of you that are managing patients on PARP inhibitors, and I think that the generalists in the audience that are listening to us, that It's like, well, I don't take care of ovarian cancer patients. These PARP inhibitors are now going to be indicated, if not already, for breast cancer, prostate, pancreatic. So this is going to affect all of us in how we manage our patients. So I think it's really important. Somebody needs to be in charge, and our physicians, of course, are in surgery. So we nurses are the ones, whether it's a practice nurse, a navigator, advanced practice, it's really important that somebody is ordering and managing these labs and knowing how to monitor when do you dose reduce, when do you hold. I think that's really important. And then that constant reinforcement of education. How is the patient feeling?
So yeah, and these are some pictures of her. Of course, this woman gave permission. We found over the years, right, there are many patients who like to kind of make the point that there can be life after cancer. Anything else you want to say about this woman and what it's been like taking care of her, Paula?
Well, it's been a pure delight. She thinks that everything we do is wonderful, and she's just full of energy. Now, it's important to remember, though, she's a stage 3 ovarian cancer, and our goal, of course, is cure. But once she relapses, we know that that changes. So we remind her that we're hoping that this is going to be the treatment that's going to prevent or delay your treatment from coming back. But if it does come back, there are other treatments out there. So we remind our patients, our chronic illness, and even if it's not curable, it is treatable. And we have evidence, all of us here today, that every year there's newer and better treatments coming out. And lately, it's been monthly, so that's really exciting.
So I love the comment in the chat room, this is why we do what we do. Yeah, for sure.
Very true.
So yeah, 95-year-old mother, I love that one too.
Yeah, she's
all right. Well, let's move on now. Yeah, conducting the orchestra. Wow, incredible. Yeah,
while on her laparib.
What a story. Okay, so a couple other points, and then we're going to move on and talk about checkpoint inhibitors. And the issue, we were talking before about cytopenias, Jennifer, and I think we already mentioned the fact that counts are recommended weekly with niraparib. I'm curious what you've seen in terms of anemia, Jenny. You know, it's been said that, I don't know whether there's more anemia with olaparib than the other ones, but just in general, how often you need to do transfusions, how much of a problem anemia is in patients on PARP inhibitors?
You know, I think a grade 1 anemia is fairly common, maybe even grade 2, but I rarely have to transfuse someone on a PARP inhibitor. And to echo Paula's point, we also keep track of everyone that's on a PARP inhibitor, all of our patients. We have a list going, and we also, for niraparib, obviously do weekly labs. And then for, it kind of depends on the patient for the other PARPs, you know, if they've had a tough time with their chemo and they're pancytopenic or we're trying to recover their bone marrow, maybe we will test weekly for a while, but eventually we get them to go monthly.
So a couple other points, and then we're going to move on and actually talk about some other issues related to PARP inhibitors. We mentioned about the hematologic toxicity, and you can see there are 3 approved PARP inhibitors, rucaparib used with recurrent disease, but you see some degrees of cytopenias with all these. You see some degree of GI toxicity. We talked about that as well. Shannon, what about dose adjustment? These are the potential dose adjustments. What are some of the issues that cause you to do dose adjustments for these drugs, and can you usually find a dose that a patient's going to be comfortable on?
Yeah, you know, I think this comes down to counseling, and I think both Paula and Jenny have touched on this. A lot of times these patients are transitioning from chemotherapy to the PARP inhibitors, and you get that whole just-a-pill syndrome where they think, oh, I'm going on a pill, it's going to be no problem. And so with appropriate pre-treatment counseling, you can let them know that it's going to take a month or two to kind of get them to their sweet spot, and that sweet spot may be top dose, or it may be a reduced dose, and we have very clear protocols around that. And so I think as long as you've got good communication and you've really kind of set the stage, then you can help a patient find their best dose. I would say, I agree with Jenny, a lot of these are just grade 1 and 2, and so we don't end up needing to do any type of dose reduction. I would say for me personally, in my practice, when I get a grade 3-4 fatigue, that's when I'm really needing to do a dose reduction. And importantly, you have to interrupt the dose first, give them a break, let them recuperate, and then go ahead and reduce their dose. My Italian hands are getting a little excessive here in the webinar. So I think, you know,
for me, that was one of your kids underneath.
So I literally am slinging my hands around. The fatigue is the one reason that I find most commonly that I need to do a true dose reduction, aside from, say, if I have a patient on like 300 of niraparib and I need to reduce the dose for a thrombocytopenia event.
We're going to move on in a second and talk about checkpoint inhibitors, but I guess there was a question in the chat room about why PARP inhibitors actually cause myelosuppression. Dave, maybe you can comment on that, because these agents do affect the bone marrow. And there also have been concerns about the potential increase of MDS, myelodysplastic syndrome, and AML. What do we know about PARP inhibitors in the bone marrow, Dave?
Neil, you have this wonderful ability to always ask me a question. I have no idea what the answer is. I saw that pop up and I said, I have no idea why these are calling bone marrow. It's affecting every cell in the body. And I think we look at that. Now, interestingly, if we look at the BRCA patients, because theoretically the BRCA patients, because every cell is impacted, would have a higher rate of side effect and toxicity. And that doesn't seem to be the case. Now, I do think an important point coming out of the most recent presentation at ASCO with regards to SOLO2 and their survival advantage. So we finally have now marked survival improvement in SOLO2, which was the recurrent setting, which is not what we're talking about here. But an interesting aspect of those findings were that the AML in myelodysplastic syndrome was 8% in the treatment arm and 4% in the placebo arm. So markedly higher than previously been reported. In the past, about 1.5% was the highest that we'd seen, 0.5 to 1.5%. So why is it happening? I don't think I can answer that question, but it is happening, something we always need to counsel a patient. A patient should not be put on PARP without counseling about AML and myelodysplastic disorder.
Although to me, like in a basic level, we know it affects DNA, you know, right. DNA and MDS, you know, you could see in the same sentence. But I think it's also important to remember SOLO2 had an incredible survival benefit. That was the use of olaparib in relapse disease. I mean, major benefit. So these people live longer. Right. And also it's interesting you mentioned that the control group had 4%. Of course, it could be lower than that. There are not that many patients. But these people get chemotherapy, et cetera, that also damages the bone marrow. Some of them have prior histories because they're BRCA, breast cancer, chemo, et cetera. So we don't have the final answer of that, but certainly there's a lot of interest in it.